seachtain an Indo-Ascaliger.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach an seo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir in reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus go mina fnacht gáir a chlig sár ducha sin éair. Ná ní bhíon ann tar d'oraach sé sin. Vin Marav.
Shachtan. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Yeah, having my head shoved into the steps of the Ulster Bank in Ranelagh, called butt of a gun put into the back of your skull, that's a moment where you go, okay, yeah, I think this one's up.
How does a high-flying academic become one of Ireland's most prolific bank robbers?
What I would see is the most important part of this still lies open.
I'm Not Here to Hurt You, a brand new series from the award-winning team behind the Indo Daily.
That November day, that's where it all begins.
Out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Fifteen years ago, Steve Jobs took to the stage to introduce what he called a revolutionary new product.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything. Apple's been very fortunate. It's been able to introduce a few of these into the world.
And this week, 15 years ago, the first iPhone went on sale.
An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. An iPod, a phone. Are you getting it?
But is it still an all-conquering device? What might the iPhone 14 bring? Can it stay at the heart of Apple's world, or will smart glasses and cars become the company's new focus?
These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone.
Well, joining me today is someone who was at the original launch. Stuart Miles is founder and CEO of PocketLint.com, which is one of the UK's best tech news sites. Stuart, were you one of those swooping?
I wasn't. I'm going to profess my professionalism there. I was, to be honest, I was too busy writing the copy to get it back to the news desk. To get out the fact that Steve Jobs had just, you know, had launched his phone and it was effectively changed the world in that arena going forward.
In those days, how were you? Were you just emailing the copy?
Yeah, so I was at PocketLint still. We had PocketLint launched in 2003, so I was we had a CMS. We were quite early on in understanding that online CMSs would be important. I remember this clearly. I was writing it straight into our CMS to file it. The guy next to me was from a national newspaper. He was writing in shorthand on one of those flip pads with a bit of pencil. And the other guy next to me was texting it back to the office on a T9 Nokia. So for those that don't, you know, like a 3310, but he was having to type, you know, A, 1, 2, 3, yeah. B, you know, C, R,
oh,
you know, five
presses, goodness.
You know, trying to write this copy in spates as it was, you know, he'd get so far and then he'd send it and then he'd do it again.
What a pro. I mean, more generally, what was it like being there?
It was really exciting. It was that to set the background slightly, we'd come from CES. So it happened in January. There's a big trade show called CES in Vegas every year. And we'd all flown into Vegas. And then a bunch of us had effectively flown from Vegas down to San Francisco for the launch and had kind of not knowing 100% what to expect. The rumor mill that you get these days where everything is detailed out in perfect, you know, harmony weeks before the event wasn't really around then. And so you kind of had this idea and the entire time, even in the build up on the announcement, it was, oh, they've launched an all screen iPod Touch. That's great, isn't it? That's good. And then he kept on going, you know, it's a web browser, it's a music player, it's a whatever. And then it's like, oh, it's also a phone. Exciting.
Yeah, I was surprised that nobody ever mixed that into some kind of German techno dance track. It seemed ripe for that. We heard some cheers there from the audience. And in the many Apple launches that I've been to, there have always been those cheers. One of the accusations that has been thrown at the media is that they join in the cheers. Now, I would say this, but I've actually never heard that from the media corps. Have you?
No, and certainly not the Brits or the Europeans from that perspective.
It's a healthy skepticism.
I think the reality is with a lot of these events is that they're, and I know you've been to plenty of them as well, there are what I would call professional clappers there that are kind of helping you around and all the other stuff. And they get very, very excited, even just kind of, look, these seats have opened up. Woo! You know, cheers and give me a, you know, S, give me an E, give me an A, give me a T, seat, yeah, amazing kind of thing. And so you've got a combination of that. They'd also feel, because it was such a big announcement, they'd obviously filled the event with VIP guests, with lots of industry people. And if you're, you know, if you're the CEO of Orange, it would have been at the time, or Vodafone or whatever, and someone's on stage, and let's face it, Steve Jobs is an amazing orator, an amazing presenter. You know, if he's on stage telling you he's just announced a product that is going to have a massive impact to your bottom line and really help you shift a lot of phones and bring more customers into your thing, you're going to be excited and you're going to clap.
Was there a lot of skepticism back then about the iPhone?
Huge, huge skepticism. I remember coming out of it feeling a tiny bit underwhelmed. Could see what the potential was, but kind of slightly underwhelmed. In the sense of, it was a time where Nokia was dominating, Sony Ericsson was fairly big, BlackBerry was kind of the business device to get. And here was a device that in reality allowed you to see your email in a pretty way, but not what seemed like a useful way from a BlackBerry perspective. Didn't have copy and paste, didn't have apps, didn't have, you know, most things. It was kind of like, oh, look, it can tell me the weather. And it's got a really good browser. I remember leaving, I was literally in San Francisco for a couple of hours. I flew in the night before, went to the event, and flew back to Vegas. And that was when I kind of started to realize that things were going to change. And Vegas at that point, everything was just, oh, it was a bit meh. It was kind of really... it really sucked all the wind out of the fanfare of Vegas. And sort of by the time you got home and then the months that followed, you kind of realized that, you know, that browser was going to be the thing that made the big difference. And that, you know, Nokia, no matter how much they tried, just didn't have a response. And even BlackBerry, you know, they launched, I think later that, or even later that year, I think the year after, they launched this device called the Storm, which was this massive screen that the whole screen moved like a pressure point thing, because they just couldn't work out how Apple had got this kind of multi-touch kind of pocket, you know, pocketable device that delivered what consumers wanted, not what business people wanted.
It's hard to overstate what a shift it was, isn't it? Because I remember in those days as well, you had Motorola with the Razr phone, you had Nokia, which you've mentioned, had in Ireland, they had a 75% market share. Literally, that was the phone to have. You still hear people talking nostalgically about those days. And then this device comes along. I was like you, I was quite skeptical about whether it could execute on the potential that it had. But I think probably we can safely say now that Steve Jobs was right. It was revolutionary.
Yeah, I mean, it's dominated not only the smartphone industry for the last 15 years, but it's also dominated the way that other smartphone manufacturers think. You know, if you look at most phones today, there's slight design changes, but they all look like the iPhone from 15 years ago. You know, even to sort of the Pixels, these days have got that two-tone color backing and things like that. And that's, you know, it's not to say, I think Apple and the iPhone have, you know, influenced the industry massively. They're not necessarily always leading when it comes to the latest tech and you know, things like that. We've seen a lot of Chinese manufacturers embrace faster charging, for example, or for a long time higher refresh rate screens or better cameras or all those things. But it's just that it's technology that is fit for purpose combined with this kind of understanding of how the consumer needs or wants to use their phone that has then allowed them to dominate that sphere so well over the last 15 years.
The other side to this, and casting the net a little bit more widely, is the iPhone created a new kind of attention-sucking device, much more so than the texting cell phone. I wonder, has that had a downside as well, or has it been for the better?
I think it's really hard, right? So it's that sense of, if you look at your phone, probably the thing you do least on it now is actually make phone calls and talk to people, okay? You're either listening to music, you're watching video, you know, you're controlling your lights. You know, if you're a Tesla owner, it's your key to your car, right? And all these kind of things. And so there's a sense of sometimes if you say, right, I'm gonna go without a phone for the weekend or whatever, you suddenly realize that you can't do a lot of other things that, regardless of social networking and stuff like that. I think there is and we're certainly learning this across, you know, over the last couple of years, there is a concern and a worry about social networking and about that sort of addictive mentality of that elastic, you know, search where you pop down and read more stuff loads, you know, the infinite scroll approach, or I've just got another notification, I just need to look at it, that kind of neediness from there. But then you could also say that if used correctly, social media is an amazing power for good, and it has the ability to, you know, overthrow corrupt governments and things like this. So I think it's all about balance. You know, if we would have the same conversation about food, you know, I love a hamburger, right? That's great. But I'm not going to eat a hamburger for breakfast, for dinner, for lunch and dinner, because that wouldn't be sensible.
If you gave me one chance to do that,
it'd be amazing.
So
right?
Do it.
But,
yeah.
But it's that thing of if you're constantly in your phone and that's all you're doing is social media, then I don't necessarily think that's the phone's fault. Okay, it's an enabler, but I also think you need to think about how you're using the product and how you can control yourself. In the same way, if you had a drinking problem or a gambling problem or something there, it's not necessarily easy, but it's an enabler, and we have to be aware of that.
I think that's exactly right, and it's very well put. I'm always amazed when I see cars pull up somewhere at a shopping center and nobody gets out of their car now immediately. There's always a 3 to 4 minute period when they check and go into a small rabbit hole on their phone first, the same way you go to bed. Who has gone to bed in the last year and not spent a few minutes on their phone, or maybe a few hours?
Yeah, you see, you'd find this strange, but certainly as someone that runs a technology website, I charge my phone downstairs.
Right.
So, and it's a game changer. I've done it for a couple of years now. It's amazing. I know this sounds very evangelical, but it's that sense of...
Sounds middle-aged, Stuart.
Oh, maybe. But I charge my phone downstairs because it feels that it gives me that, even if it's only a couple of minutes before, you know, go upstairs, brush my teeth or whatever, and then jump into bed, I'm not looking at it in the last thing at night. Or, you know, you wake up in the middle of the night and you think, oh, just check my phone and see what's happening. You know, there's not that temptation. And then in the morning, it's brilliant because you kind of get up and you find, oh, I'm just going to stretch in bed for a little bit. And then you get up, and even just that walking downstairs, even if you walk straight downstairs and pick it up and start looking, for me, there's that 30 seconds to a couple of minutes where it doesn't feel like it's running my life.
Yeah. What do we think is going to happen with the iPhone 14? It's now coming up to July. Traditionally, it's September when it is announced. This is the time of the year when a lot of the rumors hit the wires. It's also the time of year that people start wondering, well, there's really no point in me buying an iPhone 13 now if the iPhone 14 is coming out. There are some rumors of a larger non-Pro model, which I think would be logical.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, more iPhones is the safe bet. More iPhones at the beginning of September is the double safe bet. More iPhones in September with faster processors and better cameras is probably, you know, I think if we both wrote that copy, we'd be happy that we could stand by it in a couple of months' time. I think it's interesting. Obviously, the Pro models, there doesn't look like there's a huge amount of change there. There's rumors that there's going to be a what's called a punch hole camera. At the moment, the iPhones have got a notch at the top. They're talking about turning that to a punch hole, which is very similar to the way that Samsung and others display their cameras in the top of their phones on the front. And on the lower end, the standard 14, there's always been a 14 and a 14 mini. There's been discussions for, I think last year, we all thought it was going to get binned. That discussion has been raised again. The mini is a lovely little device. It's so cute and it's, you know, it's great, but the battery life is pretty shocking. And I think, you know, because obviously it's so small and you can't put a big battery in it. So I think it, as you say, it's logical that there'd be a 14 and a 14 max, as they would probably call it, mainly because it fits in with the Pro Max. They can use some of the same machining probably and tooling to do that, but also it gets the big battery and people like that. You know, they always used to like the plus size from the iPhone 7s and 6s and 8s and things like that. So I think it's people always want bigger phones because you get bigger batteries. And as you say, we're watching movies and TV shows and doing lots of other things on our phone than just putting in our pocket phone.
And we think USB-C is probably going to be another year away, right?
Well, I think it makes sense. Like Apple have a tendency to try and eke out the sort of hardware they introduce over a number of years to really save on that kind of having to retool everything each year. You can see that with, you know, predominantly with all the, you know, you normally get the phone and then the following year you get the S model, which is pretty much the same, but with a processor update. We've only just seen the 13 and 13 Pro designs. And so for them to flip it out so quickly, to me, doesn't feel like it's something, you know, I'm expecting a kind of 13S, so to speak, in that sense.
Yeah.
Obviously, because of the European dictate, they'll have to move over eventually, and it makes sense to do so. But I think that they're not going to rush it if they don't have to.
Yeah, there's another discussion that people have about whether or not to wait until the new model comes out or to buy now the current model. Mm. And normally, 90% of the time at this time of the year, I would tell people, no, wait for the next model. It's only 2 months away. This year, I'm not so sure. And for one main reason, because I'm expecting a significant price rise, at least here in Euroland. If you look what happened with the MacBook Air, the first generation M1 MacBook Air launched at about 1,100 euro. It's now at 1,229 for that same M1 model. The M2 version in Euroland is 1,529 euro, a good bit more than it is in the US, and still quite a bit more also than it is in the UK. Now, following that precedent, if I'm looking at an iPhone 13, which currently costs somewhere around 900 euro in Euroland, I'm thinking the iPhone 14 with maybe not a whole lot more to it is going to be up over the 1,000 euro mark. I don't know, of course. I'm speculating. Sure. But it adds something else into the mix this year for me.
It does. I think there's a couple of things there. On the rumors of what we can expect, I suspect because of at WWDC, there was this big play on these, effectively the home screen, lock screen, gallery of trying to make it more watch-like. And I suspect that will be certainly on the top levels. My hope, again, this is just a hope, that would be an always-on display in the same way as the Apple Watch does. You tap it and it's, you know, springs into action, you know, and it's always on because they've made such a play of this UI for these things. And there's, you know, rumors of a better camera and there's a rumors of a faster machine and all the other stuff. I think I've always seen this over the last 20 odd years that I've been covering technology. I've always used this analogy of imagine going to your local train station and there's a train coming into the platform, but the train is kind of never ending, right? It's one of those American stock cars that, you know, just 500 trucks later and it's still going and kind of thing. If you get on the train as soon as you arrive, you'll still get to where you're going and you'll get there a bit quicker. But if you wait a bit, then the seats are nicer. And so it's always that, you know, so you could wait, like you could go and buy one now and it will be a great phone and that's fine, right? And you'll be using that phone. But if you waited 3 months, you could get on the same train, but the carriage is nicer and the seats are nicer. And if you wait another 5 months, the seats are even nicer. And if you wait another 5 months.
That's true in general, though. But the point I'm making is that when you wait for that carriage a little bit later down the line, now it's not just that it's...
Oh, and the price goes up.
Yeah, that it's not just that it's the same price as the current carriage. It's now 15% to 20% to 25% more for maybe just slightly nicer velvet on the seat, you know?
Yeah, and, not and a bigger what, you've window. Also got, what you've also got to look at is that come September, there will be huge discounts on all the current range and, you know, those things as well. So if you're really about, if you're thinking about getting a new phone and you are driven by wanting all the latest shiny toys and the ability to kind of go, hey, look what I've got, you know, et cetera. And certainly with stock supply issues and stuff, it might be that you order it on September whatever, and it doesn't come till November anyway because they can't make enough of them. But you can either go for the top of the range, you know, and go that way, or you can say, right, the chances are is that now I'm going to find a really good deal on an iPhone 12.
Yep.
Or, you know, because it's still a great phone. It was a great phone. And I think sometimes that's some of the issue with technology, is that we're so focused on the now and the new and the exciting that some of the stuff is just getting a bit too powerful for the average user. And that, you know, most people probably don't need the Pro model,
right?
But there is that, and we talked about this, didn't we, before with the MacBook Pro, is that, you know, they don't necessarily need the Pro model, but they've always gone Pro, and Pro sounds as if they're supposed to be better. Mm-hmm. So let's go for that.
Well, 5G is a good example of that. I still can't come across more than two or three uses for 5G that most people benefit from, but it's included in every phone and the networks are rolling out, and eventually we'll figure out what to do with it. Do you think overall that Apple will continue to be dominated by the iPhone itself or the accessories based around it? I mean, the big story that we're expecting in the next year, one way or another, is smart glasses.
I think Apple has, over the last couple of years, has been very clever in creating this ecosystem, this kind of family of devices that means that you can't move away because there's a stickiness to certain things within that. So, you know, launch the watch. Now I use the watch for payment. I use it to open my Mac. You know, I use it to tell me whether I'm, you know, I've done enough exercise for the day. Now I suddenly, even if I didn't like the iPhone anymore, I wanted to go off and get a Samsung or a Motorola or something, I'd be like, oh, but then I'll lose the watch. And then you're like, okay, well, and then you've got the AirPods and you're like, oh, but then I really like the AirPods. And it just, oh, now I can't find my keys because I'm using Apple, you know, using the AirTags. And so it's a very good way of making their ecosystem very sticky, because you kind of, you know, oh, I'm watching this show on Apple TV that I've got to just keep another couple of months going, you know, and then blah, 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 you know, it just goes on and on. I think the glasses have the potential to do that as well, because once you start using those, if they can find a use case for that, then, you know, it's another reason not to get rid of your phone, or another reason to upgrade your phone, because all of a sudden the latest things that you want to do with this device won't work because you haven't got the latest device of on the other side of the stick.
Yeah. What do you think about cars? Do you believe, we know that Apple has had a unit looking at cars. We're not 100% sure whether that now is just the software in cars, because we know that they want auto manufacturers to essentially allow Apple software to take over all the screens in those cars, but we're not quite sure whether they're going to make a car themselves. Are we still kind of bullish about that? Do we still think they might?
I was thinking about this when they announced all the extra stuff, the teaser for WWDC at the beginning of June. Remember, and you'll know this because I know you've been around a while like I have, remember for a long time, Apple were making a TV and it was actually going to be a physical big panel TV. And even after all these years, that never materialized. But, oh, it just so happens that they've got the Apple TV box, which is kind of like an interface for your TV that allows you to run your TV. And I wonder whether all this chatter about an Apple car is purely because they were trying to understand how the telemetrics and how cars effectively work, you know, from a what they need to do from a software point of view to understand and create a UI for manufacturers to use. Because if you're trying, you can only do so far if you're creating that software from scratch. You need thousands of people within the car industry to understand what's important, what's relevant, what's the way to go. And I wonder whether we've seen now that actually it's not a five-door saloon, it's the interface to run all five-door saloons.
Yeah, I think you might be right, although I do think that would be unusual for Apple in if you believe that they like to control the whole platform. I think with the TV, for example, it may not be as successful a part of their ecosystem as some of their other products, because they don't actually control the physical TV with everything else they do, the computer, the phone, the tablet. But I think you're probably on the money there. In terms of iPads and MacBooks, I remember one time a few years ago, I was interviewing Tim Cook, asked him, look, what are the chances of a touchscreen MacBook? And at the time he said, nope, that would ruin the experience of the MacBook. It's not the way the computer is set up. And yet, I'm looking at some of the updates to iPadOS. I'm looking at it getting a lot closer to macOS. And I'm starting to wonder, maybe there will be a touchscreen MacBook in a while.
I don't know. I don't think there will be. It's one of those things that Steve Jobs said a number of times, wasn't it? Oh, why would you want to touch the screen? That doesn't make sense, right? And then because he was all about using the iPad and that sort of sofa experience. And what they found is that people want to type and to do things at speed, you need a keyboard on the iPad. And so that's why they've got the Magic Keyboard and some, you know, there's lots of third party, because it's one of those desire lines, isn't it? It's like you build a park and you put paths in and then people walk across the grass. And it's like, well, I don't want them to walk across the grass. I'm going to put signs on, but they do it anyway. Mm. And I think that's the same thing. You know, as I use my iPad a lot, certainly when I'm traveling, and it's always with a keyboard because it's, you know, it's easier than using the Mac. I think what we're seeing now, and I don't necessarily think this is the best way, but they're trying to, it felt this WWDC with stage managers, that they're trying to formulate a consistent UI, a user interface across the Mac and the iPad OS that is somewhat similar, so that they can get Mac users to understand how to use an iPad in a multitasking way and vice versa. But unfortunately, from what I've seen so far, it's trying to do too many things. And so therefore it doesn't necessarily, it's not a great solution for one or a great solution for the other.
Finally, do you think the iPhone can keep its bull run going? I mean, I've seen surveys, particularly in the US, where for under 21s, it absolutely dominates. I mean, there are countries in Europe, France, Germany, where Android is a lot more popular for various reasons. But in the UK, in Ireland, in the US, and a lot of other countries, even among kids, you would think that because iPhones can be more expensive, that Android handsets would be the more natural choice, but that's not the way it's turning out. So I guess if you're Apple, you're thinking, we have a shot of at least for the next 4 or 5 years still being top dog.
I'm sure that's exactly what the BlackBerry CEO said, and I'm sure that's exactly what Nokia's CEO said, or even the HTC CEO said when they were at the top as well. I think it's the success of Apple on that side of things is that they have this ecosystem that they've built. And so there are multiple devices that support, you know, that structure. It's not just, you know, HTC or Nokia or even BlackBerry's fault was they were just phone companies and had nothing else. Mm. And so when one didn't work, or, you know, it was very easy to swap out from HTC to the Samsung Galaxy when that turned up and started getting better, and then you just never look back. I think it's, you know, as long as Apple continues to innovate and continue to adapt to what we need and work, then as any company would, then I think they've got a chance of succeeding. I think where they're perhaps helpful against others, you know, they've got a little bit of a head start, is that it's such a strong brand that a lot of the time, I think that brand cachet, you know, in the same way that, you know, Nike or Adidas have got such a strong brand, and you go, well, these on clouds, they're amazing, they're brilliant, right? They're so much better, but they're just never going to compete because they don't have that brand heritage. They don't have that kind of buy-in from so many different places and culture and all the other stuff. That, you know, as long as they make sure they don't get lazy and don't innovate, then I think they'll be fine.
I think they'll be fine too. Stuart Miles, founder and CEO of pocketlint.com. Thank you very much for joining us today, and check out Stuart's newsletter. They have an excellent newsletter every morning, which you can sign up to for free. And that's all we have time for this week. So for me, Adrian Weckler, the tech editor of the Irish and Sunday Independent, thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you same time next week. Bye-bye.